Something happened in here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. Make it time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's
going on. Hello, I'm Debbie Mackey.
And I'm Alan Mackey.
And we are your hosts on Left of Liberal, a program and a Facebook page we've created. The Facebook page is called Left of Liberal with hosts Alan and Debbie Mackey. Look for the white teak poppy, and you'll get our page. There are other Left of Liberals, so be sure and look for the white teak poppy. We have a contact number of 512-517-2708 and an email address of leftofliberal@outlook.com.
One of the main reasons we have undertaken doing this program, Left of Liberal, is because we feel very strongly peace and disarmament are central to most working class issues and form the basis for pulling together a massive, broad-based, all-people's front comprising liberals, progressives, and leftists, and many other people, irrespective of class, but the left oriented towards working class issues, focused on anti-imperialism, is going to be the catalyst in educating and organizing this all people's united front for peace and disarmament, for equality and social and economic justice, with socialism on the table now, not later. And, you know, we want to create an atmosphere with this program that encourages working people to sit around their kitchen tables, sit in their living rooms, wherever they are, in coffee shops, and discuss the issues of the day and the problems working people are facing and the kinds of solutions that will be required to solve our problems. Unless working people start to speak up and make their voices heard, the people in power, the wealthy, they are the ones that determine what will be done in this country. And we have to work in a way that empowers working people to take action, to assert their rights, and to struggle for justice.
And you can listen to our program, Left of Liberal, every Monday at 7 p.m. Central. We're also part of a panel for Stuart Alexander's program, 1 Hour Left. It's on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Central. Also consider joining his or the Facebook page. I guess it's our Facebook page, Socialist Can Connection Action Network. We also have... we had a meeting last Saturday, August 10th, for the Socialist Can Make a Difference. And we have a couple guests, Stuart Alexander and Lauren Parmley, with us. So do you want to kind of take
Thanks
over
for the
Yeah, do you want to go ahead and kind of take over, Stuart, with talking about the meeting?
Well, I would just like to start out by just mentioning we had a very successful meeting getting together for the first time with Socialist Can Making a Difference. We met there in the Austin, Texas area. Primarily what we were doing at the meeting was making plans and also discussing among ourselves how we can organize Socialist Connection Action Network as we move forward. Of course, we covered many things during the meeting. Partially, some of the things that we got into was talking about discussing putting together our website, which we'll be putting up our first website within the next 3 weeks or by the first week in September. That's going to give us an opportunity where we can be able to present a vast amount of information on the internet, where people will be able to go onto our website, be able to access when we have meetings. Like, we'll be preparing for our next meeting next year, but it's going to give us a head start, a jump, where we'll be able to let people know about the dates, places, locations, various people that will be speaking. But all that information will be available once we have our website. In addition to that, we talked about making it more accessible, where people can be able to communicate within Socialist Connection Socialist Connection Action, Socialist Connection Action Network, where we will be having free conference calling. We had discussed how we can be able to put to better use the various blocks that we have. One of the things, two of the programs we have, which is on Blog Talk, we come on weekly, Socialist Can, 1 Hour Left, and also Left of Liberal. That will also be on the website where people can look at the, listen to the various programs that we have had over a period of time. And also, beyond that, Alan has his blog post that he has had for quite a few years, and we'll be able to post a lot of information of, about what is on his blog post. But the other thing is, as we...
Pro-Dunk, too. Thoughts from Pro-Dunk is his blog.
Exactly. And as we start networking with other groups and organizations, we look forward to put putting that information about other groups and our affiliation with those groups on the internet as well, and I should say on our website, where people can see what we're doing in our local communities and also what we're doing nationally. But and as we go through the program today, I'll just share some of the other things that we went through on the, at the meeting.
And we were also able to put some videos on the Socialist Can Facebook page that you can look at. Consider joining that page, and you'll be able to see them if you're not already a member. There's some good videos on there about the program. That are the meeting that we had. Also,
now one of the things that I was very glad to participate with other members there to a meeting this weekend was to speak in support of getting the governor of Texas to free Rodney Reed, which he is an innocent man on death row. There's evidence, sufficient evidence to show that he was wrongfully convicted. And regarding the death of Stacey Sykes, and as a result of that, we're calling on the governor to release him. His family is also, the family of Stacey is also calling for his release and not to be executed because, as I mentioned, he was wrongfully convicted, and also the accusations that came against him was as a result of a very corrupt system, a corrupt police department that helped to frame him for that crime. So I was glad to participate and look forward to having Socialists Can to provide that additional assistance as we move forward.
I would point out, Stuart, today I sent a letter to the governor, and I asked the governor for a meeting with him, and I followed that up with a telephone call, and I received a response back by email saying that the governor is considering my request.
And
that's
then we were also
good. Glad
to have Lauren Parmley join us. He drove all the way from Mississippi and then drove back the next day. So he had quite an effort getting here. And then, of course, you came from California, Stuart.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Alan and Debbie. I appreciate it being on the program and getting a chance to speak this evening.
So maybe we can go through a couple of the things that we talked about at our meeting on Saturday.
And Alan, I'm looking at that letter that you sent out. And also I've already have shared that information as well. But we're encouraging other people to participate and also to share that information so we can get the greater support from not only members but people throughout the country.
Yeah, we need to flood this governor with letters and telephone calls and requests for that people meet with him directly in his office, people, especially people in the Austin area here, because we can't allow this execution to proceed.
And we had everybody go around and in the beginning to introduce themselves and to mention what their activism has been the last several years. And Lauren is working on something now that he mentioned about the immigrants getting arrested in Mississippi, and so he's been real active with that. Do you have anything to say about it?
It's been such a shock because they swooped in last Wednesday, the 7th, at about 7:30 in the morning, and they simultaneously hit 7 different processing plants in 6 different cities, and this coincided on the first day of school, so they arrest 680 people and detain them, workers at chicken processing plants, and a lot of them had just dropped off their kids at school.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that at the last half hour of the program. But yeah, that was quite a shock that you came to the
communities are still reeling, and support is just now being set up. So there's a lot of work to do with that.
This is one way that the Socialist Connection Action Network can be very effective. We've got some very immediate problems. We've got the problems that we're working on every day. But we've also got to respond to the problems of working people that come up like this. And the situation with Rodney Reed, the situation with the immigrants that are under attack. It's the working class that's under attack in this country in every way. And we've got to respond to those attacks, but we've also got to focus on our main programs that we're going to be involved in. And things like Social Security, the minimum wage, peace and social justice issues, how they connect and go together. So maybe we can talk a little bit about that for a moment.
And healthcare and student loans are all things that we're addressing in that group.
Well, part of what we were discussing over this weekend, we were getting into the mission statement of Socialist Connection Action Network. And at the beginning of our demands, we are calling for an end to the drive for the endless wars and an immediate 75% cut in all military spending and bringing the troops home now. And we can see that a lot of what is taking place in the news media in regards to immigration, many of the way the nation has moved in a very racist direction, where we can see the assault so many blacks and people of color and brown people. We can see how fascism has spread throughout the world. We can see the racist agenda that Trump has and his backers, how they're spreading his racist agenda across the globe. We see how Steve Bannon is going to other countries to make certain that they spread that racist agenda as well. But much of this is creating division, not only within the various countries where we are spreading that hate, but also is creating a division as well from being able to meet any type of meeting the social needs of not only this country but many other countries as well. And when I say countries, I'm talking about meeting the social needs of working people. Now, when we are talking about how we're going to achieve these demands, very often people say, "Well, where's the money going to come from?" Well, we must take a look and realize that every year we're spending well over $1 trillion, well over $1 trillion on defense spending. If you look at just the military spending alone, we're spending well over $700 billion on military spending. So when we talk about how we're going to achieve our demands, we're going to achieve our demands by calling for drastic cuts in military spending. Drastic cuts is in regards to how Wall Street corporations that are being backed by Wall Street and being subsidized by Wall Street making cuts in those areas as well. And when we look at big corporations, we can see that many of the big farms in this country, agriculture, how it is being subsidized by the government. Just recently, China has indicated that they are cutting agriculture imports to that country in retaliation of the Trump war, trade wars that he has implemented against China. But now you have this government is already saying that they're going to be subsidizing the farmers. Well, when you talk about programs that Trump has already implemented to attack that country, China, and how it is having a negative effect on that economy and the working people there, and then is also having a negative effect and impact on this country, and then we're saying that, talking about subsidizing various companies and various farmers in this country because of the results of a poor policy of this country. So when we look at what is taking place with trade, what we see in regards to the military spending, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars that is more than adequate to take care of the human needs, of the social needs within this country. So we say that we're looking at a cut in military spending. Part of that is in result of these endless wars. This country has been in existence for just at 230 years, and well over 90% of the time that this country has been in existence, we have been in one type of war or another. So we say that we need to have an immediate 75% cut in military spending. At minimum, that should be something that's reasonable in regards to what our demands are. Then we have the monies that we are talking about, as Alan, as you mentioned earlier, $500, where we can start paying more toward Social Security benefits for many seniors. And also, when you look at how student debt has gotten over $1.4 trillion, how we can do something to eradicate that high cost for education for students, we're calling for removing a cancellation on the student debt. That's the way we should start, but how we should move forward is people going to college and graduate school, how that should be paid for by much of the monies that we're using right now just for war.
Right. So this racism that's being driven by war, it's Trump is also using racism here in this country to divide the American people. And the main way he's using racism is to create this wedge and to drive division among the working class. It's his attack on immigrant workers. So Debbie's going to read an article here from the New York Times. It's a little better than the Wall Street Journal article. And then after that, we'll ask Lauren to give us a report from the front lines there.
Yeah, it's titled, it's August 12th today, In the Wake of Ice Sweeps, Anxiety Grows Among Family Left Behind. It's by Richard Fawcett. This happened in Morton, Mississippi. I'm not sure if that's where you're doing some of your work, Lauren.
Very far away. Morton's about 50 miles east on Highway 20.
Okay. And from a distance last Friday morning, the parking lot of the PH Food could have been hosting a flea market. Scores of vehicles were haphazardly parked, and a throng of people milled around. A woman sold tacos al pastor and tacos de asada from the back of the food truck. But something far less festive was unfolding. On the asphalt, a few feet from the taco truck, bright yellow cartons overflowed with knives and sharpening tools used to debone chickens left behind by 99 workers who were swept up in a massive federal immigration raid at the plant last Wednesday morning. Many of the people who flocked to the parking lot on Friday were relatives of the detained. They had come to claim the tools or drive away some of the dozens of abandoned cars. Others were workers who were documented or simply not working the Wednesday morning shift when the raid occurred. Friday was also payday, and the only thing open in the chicken plant was the office that cut the paychecks. Mostly people wanted to know what would happen next, when they could return to work, and whether the doors that this chicken processing plant had opened for them would close. The raid had been part of a sweeping crackdown across Mississippi at 7 work sites, the largest single state operation of its kind in recent memory. "Look, I have faith that I am going to survive, but not 100%, said Betsabeth Caricher Hernandez, a taco vendor who had parked her truck in the chicken plant lot for 15 years. "Not if most of the Latinos don't come back." In the public imagination, the mythos and moral failures of this state are wrapped up in cotton. In reality, modern Mississippi is a poultry state, accounting for nearly $3 billion of the state's $7.7 billion agriculture industry in 2017, compared with $623 million for cotton. According to the Mississippi State University Extension Service, over the last decade or so, in a small country, cities like Morton, population 3,500, has been Hispanic workers, many of them undocumented, who have been most willing to deal with the blood and the guts of the stench of the business. They came to Morton to work at PH Foods or to work at the big Koch Foods. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. Yes, you did.
Okay. KOCH, chicken plant up Highway 80, which spreads its scent around town with the shifting breeze. The smell of dead things, not yet rotten. Hispanics made up 13% of the population in 2000 and now account for about a quarter of it. The numbers are in line with the wave of Latino immigration that has transformed the southern United States. Between 2008 and 2018, the South saw an increase of 33% in its Latino population, more than any other region. Morton is in Scott County, east of Jackson, historically in the heart of cotton country. 9 lynchings of black residents took place here between 1877 and 1950. Today, Morton is a mash uptown, not unlike many other small cities. There are signs for boiled peanuts and envios de dinero, money transfers overseas. There's a Sonic drive-in, Maria's Mercado, a pizza hut, a Chinese food place on 4th Street, has signs for English lessons and Spanish lessons, a bilingual sign at the City Hall. Here in Aki Inn, Morton beckons residents to a circus in town this weekend. But the raids across the state now have scores of families wondering where they belong, which members might stay, and who might be forced to leave. In a store Friday morning, a 36-year-old woman named Juana, who, like many undocumented people, declined to give her last name because she feared being targeted by the authorities, clutched a bouquet of cilantro, trailed by her 2-year-old daughter, Emily. Her husband had been picked up in the raid, she said. He talked to her on the phone Thursday, she said, and told her he was going to be deported. "It's horrible. I'm afraid I've lost him," she said in Spanish. She motioned to her little girl in pigtails wearing a shirt that declares in English, "I am a princess worth waiting for." "She is going to be without her father," Juana said. Emily, the little girl, was born in the United States. Juana said it made sense for the two of them to try to stay and make it in America. "I don't want to go back to Guatemala," she said. "There's violence everywhere." In the PH Food parking lot, a Mexican man named Omar, 39, had come for his wife's tools. She was apparently on Wednesday and apprehended on Wednesday and transferred to a detention center in Louisiana. He said he would try to get a lawyer. His wife does not have a criminal record, he said, and so he thinks she might have a good chance of being released. "And besides," he said, "their life is not in Pachuca, the old mining town in south central Mexico, where he grew up and left years ago. It was here in Morton, the only world they knew, where they had a house paid off," he said proudly, "and raised 3 American-born children, ages 11, 9, and 6. On Friday, pallets were stacked high with packing materials and high-grade sodium phosphate inside the chicken processing plant. But the chicken lines were not running. The supervisor named Jorge Mazarigos, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, took a call on his cell phone Monday morning. I'm open 6 o'clock day shift, he said. Mr. Mariagos did not think there were enough workers to bring the chicken plant up to full capacity, perhaps 30%, he said. He did not know what the future might hold. "I think people are going to leave this state out of fear," he said, "but not necessarily return to Latin America. They'll go to Atlanta or Memphis." Beyond the Hispanic community, it was easy to find an alloy of emotions. People said they were empathetic, but they also said they wanted immigrants to stop violating federal immigration law. I kind of hate to see it, said Gerald Neal, a 61-year-old ponytailed bass player and a fan of President Trump. He said that he worked with Hispanics and that he hated to see families torn apart. "But it comes down to, are we going to be a nation of laws or not?" At a Subway sandwich shop on Highway 80, Mark Henry Branch, 54, of Wheatland, Missouri, said he had been coming to town as a trucker for 2 years, hauling in chicken feed and hauling out chicken meal. "At first, I got scared," he said, "not so much for the detained people, but for the entire industry, from the chicken growers to the mill workers who make the feed." But he was relieved to see that the Koch plant was operational Friday morning. "Mississippi's immigrant rights infrastructure is as weak as the chicken industry is strong. And this week, activists, lawyers were pouring in from around the southeast and beyond to offer expertise, representation, and succor. But there has always been an informational network here in Americans looking out for non-citizens during hard times. Sarah Ramos, 42, a homemaker, had driven down to Jena, Louisiana to bail out a family member in detention there. Her son had sent her links to the news that Koch Foods would be hosting a job fair on Monday in the city of Forest, Mississippi, about 11 miles east of Morton, where many workers were swept up in the raid. Miss Ramos huffed, "I want to see how many American citizens are going to want to take those jobs," she said. So what have you been doing to help out? You've been, demonstrating, Lauren?
No, it happened so quick, and everybody was just shocked, and the raids happened about 7:30 Wednesday morning, last Wednesday the 7th, and everybody went into kind of a crisis mode, and several other groups, local groups, got together Thursday afternoon and had a press conference down at the NAACP headquarters in Jackson. And the mayor's office hastily drew up a proclamation that Jackson was not going, the city of Jackson was not going to be working with ICE, and that Latinos and immigrants should feel safe in Jackson. He was calling on the churches to pitch in and provide sanctuary for people. The whole thing is just, people are just now getting together. There's several groups that are doing some really important work. The Mississippi Center for Justice, they're helping people locate loved ones that have been detained. So if anybody out there is or knows somebody that has been detained and they can't find them, then they need to contact the Mississippi Center for Justice. They have a rapid response legal team.
And, do you have a number for them?
Yeah, their phone number is 601-352-2269. They do provide some legal assistance also to low-income people. And then the ACLU of Mississippi is working with different people too. And they've got an 800 number for them. And MIRA, Mississippi Immigrants Rights Alliance, they've got a GoFundMe campaign, and then they're accepting hygiene donations, a dental hygiene, just essentials, and also canned goods and food, beans, things like that, canned soups, and various churches. In Forest, there's I believe it's the Baptist Church there in Forest County, which is working with the people down in that little town, down in Carthage, I believe, yeah. But it was so weird. In the morning, ICE arrests 680 people, and then by that evening, they've let go 300 on what they called humanitarian grounds. And I got so angry with the ICE spokesman, because on TV they had, the kids were crying, and they didn't know where their parents were. Children went home, and there was nobody there. And little kids, kindergartners, first graders, there's nobody at home. They don't know what's going on. And this little girl's crying on TV saying, please let my mommy go. I need my mommy. And this I spokesman says, well, I can understand how she felt, but we only held her parent, her mother, for a few hours. And I'm just like, man, they're torturing these people. I mean, that's the psychological torture. It
these children, they'll remember this. This will be devastating.
Scorned that little girl for life.
Yeah.
It was just, it's awful. And these people are cold-blooded. One of the, it showed the picture of the locker room where the employees had lockers. And all their stuff, cell phones, clothes, stuff is ripped to shreds, thrown on the ground like garbage. None of it looked like it could be used again. I mean, these ICE agents, they're thugs, they're cold-blooded. They're just like the raiders that went in the immigrant raids in the 30s and the 50s, where they just grabbed up whole loads of people, some citizens, and shipped them out.
One has to question why they held these raids in the first place. What was the motivation? Because the crimes that these people committed are the crime of going to work and trying to make a living.
You know, they timed this right before Trump was to talk in El Paso. They knew that was happening, and they timed it on the first day of school. They did this just to make maximum psychological damage. And now these people have been detained. They can't work legally in this country again, and they have to wait for court dates. Wear ankle monitors.
They can't apply to have their to get work visas or anything.
No,
while they're waiting.
No, they're not allowed to work. Period.
So how will the families get by?
That's the whole plan.
They're trying to starve the people there out, just like they are trying to starve the people in Venezuela, what it sounds like.
The whole thing, Bill Chandler said this on TV like Thursday evening. He said it's white supremacy, and the people that run this country are trying to run out all the brown-skinned people they can, and they haven't figured out what to do with the black people, but they're going to do something. It's a war on people.
This is only going to get worse. It's a terrible situation.
This is just the beginning.
What do you suggest that can be done on a nationwide basis with a small group like we have to support the workers there?
I think first that we have to take care of the people that are shut in. I drove down to Canton today where the Pico chicken. They have two Pico plants there in Canton, but they only hit one. And I drove by there, and the plant was operating, and there were a lot of cars in the parking lot. So that was still functioning. But I went to a bakery and a supermarket, Hispanic, and both the people there told me business was way down, and people were scared to come out of their houses, undocumented immigrants, and they were just locked in. They're scared to send their kids to school. It's awful.
So where are these children now? Are they still being held in the churches or the ones whose parents are detained?
Hasn't been any numbers about like how many children went home and there was no parent there. The Scott County School District, which is over where Morton and Pelahatchie is, where two of the plants were targeted, they instructed the bus drivers, because they knew by mid-morning what was going on, and they instructed the bus drivers to keep the kids on the buses and not let them go if they didn't physically see an adult there. And the CPS people were scrambling trying to find places for these kids to stay temporarily till they could figure out what to do.
Do you know what the bail bonds have been on these people?
I don't know that.
Okay. What about this job fair? Do you know anything about that?
Well, they had a job fair in Canton, and there's big hiring. We're hiring sign up there that I passed by, and there was a job fair. I was reading in the paper earlier. I couldn't tell you what town it was, but they had the supervisor there said they had like between 30 and 50 people come, which is, he said, about normal. You know, whether there's anything, you know, without anything going on. So
this article here in the New York Times says that they were going to hold a job fair, that Koch Foods was going to hold a job fair in Forest, Mississippi. Have you been around there?
Well, no, Forest is Forest County. That's a pretty good ways away.
Okay.
That's about 80 miles. That's where Bay Springs is.
Okay. Were you going to say something, Stuart? I thought I heard you pop up.
What I was going to look at is much of the larger problem that we have in regards to immigration and how it's being handled, because we can see that this Congress, the Democrats, as well as the Republicans, they have essentially... they have put the issue of immigration in the hands of the president. And subsequently, when you have someone like Donald Trump in the White House, and you have Stephen Miller, which is his right hand to carry out much of his immigration, his acts on immigration, we can see why it has taken the direction that it's taken. Now, here, Congress, you have the Democrats as well as Republicans under this administration. They have had more than 2 years to come up with some type of comprehensive immigration plan of how they will deal with this. That's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is that we're creating a crisis south of the border, where much of the problems that we're having in regards to immigration is because of what we have caused as a nation. I mean, eventually, when you consider what has taken place in Venezuela, that's going to also create an influx of immigrants because of the chaos that this government is creating. Presently, right now, you're not even seeing it on the mainstream media. You're not seeing it much on the internet about how this administration has come out with a full pledge attack assault on the people there in Venezuela. And as a result of that, what they have done is you have now they have Washington has escalated these sanctions with a all-out full-fledged embargo on that country. This is going to create hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people going hungry. Is going to create many people dying as a result of what has taken place. But that is part of the problem. But here, this Congress is supporting everything that Trump is doing there in Venezuela. They have his full support, and they're also backing this illegal escalation of sanctions against that country. So we're part of the problem. We are the problem. So if we're the problem, we really can't be the solution. And the solution, when we are constantly creating more problems. And here you have the Democrats, which they're the ones that are controlling the House. You see that they are siding with the Republicans over all of these actions of this president. So the problem is very broad.
I think they're just hoping that we'll get used to this and eventually just look the other way, just like they did in the 1920s and 30s during Hitler's time, and we'll just ignore it all. It'll just be an everyday thing that we'll ignore, just like the people in Germany did back then. They eventually ignored it.
I would like to ask Alan. Alan, when you consider what has taken place in regards to how we're creating a problem there in Central and South America, what are your ideas how we can be effective as a small group to be able to address these immense problems. Alan?
Well, I think we have to explain to people why the people have come to this country that are under attack now in places like Mississippi. And this relates to the policies of Wall Street's imperialist agenda in Latin and South America. And the people have fled those countries because of the oppression and repression and the exploitation there and the violence that's being whipped up. And, you know, so they've come to this country, and now they're facing the same kind of oppression and repression on the part of the American government right here in our own country in Mississippi. And Mississippi is no stranger to oppression and repression. It's the Mississippi government and the federal government in Mississippi has been very vicious and barbaric and racist over the years, over many years. I'd like to know, though, Lauren, are any of these poultry plants organized by unions?
Oh, no. No.
So, what are the wages
really,
like?
It's really, they do everything they can to keep unions out of Mississippi. When I was traveling back from the conference, I took a small a country road back home, a U.S. 79, and I think I was outside of Buffalo, which is a small town, maybe 1,000 people, and there was an old shack, and it had an IBEW big sign on it. So that gave me hope. You know, a lot of those small towns, they've still got a lot of union employees there in Texas. And but no, we tried to organize up at the Canton plant, and the votes weren't even close.
So, well, a lot of if a person isn't legally working, they're not going to probably vote for a union or voice support for a union, even though that their sympathies might lie with the union.
Well, exactly. You know, what they're doing now is just run everybody underground. And the day after the raids on Thursday, there was a home invasion in Canton where they targeted a Latino household because they figured they wouldn't call the police.
What are the housing conditions like, the living conditions that the people are living in there that are being deported?
I drove through the trailer park that's next to the processing plant there, and it was pretty rough. And that side of town over there in Canton, the houses are, say, pre-World War II houses back to turn of the century. And it's a pretty rugged neighborhood over there.
Maybe over the next few weeks you could take some pictures and post them on the Socialist Can site.
I can do that. I was hoping to talk to some employees there, and there's plenty of places where I think I can get, because they're parking right next to the fences on two different sides of that plant, and I think I can get some of those employees to talk to me.
Well, that would be good.
And yeah, I'm going to work on that.
You can post those thoughts and what you're learning on our Socialist Can page.
I'll do that.
The other thing is, I don't think we should settle for that they've taken away people's right to work. I know when I was being deported in Canada, that's the first thing the Canadian government did is take away my right to work to try and starve our family out without being able to fight back against the deportation. And when people all across the country demanded that we be allowed to work and pointed out that they were trying to starve us out as the way to get around the hearing to allow us to stay, you know, thousands of people wrote to the Canadian Minister of Immigration demanding that I be allowed to work, and they lifted that order, and I was allowed to work as a janitor in the public school. So, you know, I think we should look into this and start and maybe talk to some of those lawyers there about how we might reverse this thing, because people have to be able to work if they're going to survive. These are people that don't have a lot in their savings accounts. They may not even have a savings account. And in order to survive, they're going to have to work. We can't allow these people to be pushed out. So I think that's one thing a group like ours can do is raise this issue of the right of these people to be able to go back to work. And that should be raised very vigorously all across this country.
Yeah, I could work on that here.
That would be good. We'll have to post something on our Facebook page about this, too, because this is terrible that a government would take away a person's right to work, knowing that there is no other way for somebody to support their families and to survive without working. And I don't know.
Right.
We should find out what the wages were like in those plants for the people that are that were picked up.
Some of the employees were saying that it was like $12 to $16 an hour.
Yeah, and that means that they have no kinds of savings and they're not going to be able to get by. So churches
exactly.
and stuff are going to have...
They're grueling jobs. I mean, they're really yeah. grueling, nasty jobs.
And that means that, you know, churches and stuff are going to have to take up collections of canned goods and frozen foods and stuff to help these people get by. I know, and in my own situation, when we were being deported, local ministers took up collections of food so that we could survive, because they knew that, you know, there was no way for us to survive otherwise. And we got a lot of contributions of canned goods and eggs, and people even donated cows and hogs and chickens. So, you know, people will do this. I'm encouraged by this article in the New York Times. On the one hand, they point out the racism that exists in this country on the part of the Trump supporters. And but it also points out that there are many people that are supportive of the right of these immigrants to stay in this country and to work. And people resent people having their jobs taken away from them in a case like this. On the one hand, the government is allowing them to stay for their hearings, I guess. But on the other hand, the government is saying you can't work. So how can they even stay for their hearing if they can't feed their families? You know, this is a terrible situation.
So the plants that were closed down because the workers were arrested, are they back up and running 100%? Was this job fair to get people back in there, to get the plants up and working?
The only plant that shut down was the PH Food plant in Morton, and they had about 100 employees, and about 80 of them were arrested. But they had enough to open on Friday.
Okay.
And as far as I know, all the other plants have been operational, even though some of the plants, like the Koch Foods there in Morton, chickens would go in, live chickens, and then that same truck would come out later. So they might not be accepting all their all of their orders. But the two people I talked to at the grocery store and the bakery, they've canceled all their orders, and they're not ordering anything. They don't have any customers. And their bread comes from another processing plant that processes the chickens, so they can't get bread either.
I'm just curious, Lauren was here during the Bush administration where they had a raid of certain companies here in California, and a person that I knew, he had a fence company where he had approximately 700 employees, and they raided that company, which was, it was the largest fence company here in California at the time. But not only did they raid the company, but they also arrest the owners and many of the executives that were in the company. Essentially, they closed the company down, and the owner was under house arrest for 2 years, and a couple of his executives, they were under house arrest also. They didn't go and serve any time in prison or whatever, but they were under house arrest, and many of the people were deported. But I'm just curious, these companies, the ones that were shut down, did they arrest the executives or the people that were running those companies, or any of the managers or owners of those companies?
No, they haven't done that yet. One of the managers, I believe it was at MP Foods in Pilahatchee, they asked him, some reporters asked him about hiring practices, and he said, well, that's not my job and that's not my department, but we have a company that does that. So there's another company that does the hiring for this MP Foods, and I kind of wonder if that's that extra layer of security to buffer these chicken processors from from doing jail time. There was a company in East Tennessee last year, I believe, or year before, it had spent like 18 months in prison over this kind of thing.
That's been my experience. I used to work, you know, for the phone company, so I'd have to go to a place to get their circuit up. But it was an egg company. They sold to the grocery stores in the Dallas area, but they were constantly being raided. But they didn't take the people who were working. They took the owners each time to jail, and which kept the company still working. You know.
Are these owners, are they local owners, or are these absentee owners of these processing plants?
Well, the Koch Foods, they're owned, I think, by an Illinois company, and the Pico Foods, I'm not sure where they're located, and the other ones I'm not sure about either.
Maybe you can find all these things out. I'm going to send you this article from the New York Times, and over the next week or a couple weeks, maybe you can go through this article. You know, when we read things in the mainstream media, you have to read between the lines. Well, maybe you can fill in what they haven't informed people about in this article, and we can post that on the Socialist Can Facebook page. How does that
sound? I could do that. Yeah, I could do that. I think a lot of people don't understand the ripple effects and how this is going to really hurt these smaller communities of 8,000, 10,000 people when you take a big chunk of the workforce out. It's a lot of money, you know.
We've only got about a minute left. Does anybody want to take a few seconds to add to this?
Well, I just want to mention on our program that we'll be having coming up on Socialist Can, 1 hour left, which will be coming up in a couple of days on Wednesday, and that will be at 6 o'clock Pacific time, and our program will be organizing within Socialist Can Get Involved. So we're going to be talking about how people can directly get involved. Some of the things that we've talked about in this meeting, what they can actually start doing right in their local communities, and what they can do within the organization. That'll be Wednesday, our program Wednesday at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Atlantic time. Eastern.
And then thank you for Lauren for coming on and letting us know about this, what's going on, and we appreciate your work with it, immigration.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.
And we should put on next week. I hope people will tune in to our program because we're going to have a very special guest, a longtime family friend and friend of Rodney Reed is going to be on our program to talk about the Rodney Reed case and her personal association with Rodney Reed and Reed family. So that'll be an important program, and we hope people will share these programs, our program, Left of Liberal, and Stewart's program, 1 hour Left. So, this is the way we can get word around and create discussions among working people by sharing these programs, and that's the purpose of our programs, is to get people discussing these issues.
And then we'll be with y'all again Wednesday at 8 p.m. Central. And I guess we'll all be, the same people will be on the program, I guess.
I'll be looking forward to it.
I suppose Matt will join us, too. Matt Owen will join us, I suppose, too. But anyway, so I guess we better call it quits. And thanks for joining us, Stuart and Lauren.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you again on Wednesday.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
See you. Yep. Talk to you then. Have a good night.
Yep. Good night.